not allowed because of COVID to go into people's homes? Is that like a government issue thing or just a BSBE? Sorry, I was just BSBE. A BSBE policy to keep your workers safe.
So I don't know. I mean, I might want to defer that one to Brian, as it's more of a agency-wide question. But I will say that, for our part, right now we are consciously doing every intake over the telephone. The RIA teachers have uniformly been working solely remotely for the last 6 months, and it's. And it's for in the mobility arena that we've begun to go out and serve clients. It is not, I will say that it is possible now that that we'll be able to respond to requests for indoor instruction. So far, none of the staff have reported the absolute need to do that. But, and so for, I'd say that's our experience to date. But I'll defer to Brian for the general policy question.
Hi, this is Brian. I will be, there's an agenda item on COVID-19 updates, and I think that that's probably the best place for me to scoop up a number of the newer developments that we have, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that's fine. We can defer the discussion to that agenda item.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank
Is that you okay with you, Marianne? Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Brian and Chris. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. Other questions for Chris? Hearing none, let's move to Children's Services. Catherine, you have the floor.
Hold on. Okay. I think that first up, Lori St. Amant is going to give the update on what's going on with Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead, Lori.
Okay, thanks. So the last time we spoke, we were just beginning to notice that services were transitioning from that in-person to requesting people to stay in touch via social media or, you know, FaceTime or even just over the phone. It very quickly became apparent to me that the world might have been changing, but volunteers and consumers were not changing, and people still wanted to help. And that volunteers have been leading this whole thing from the sidelines, and so I can't thank them all enough, but they are fantastic people. And so since January, typically I would give my report from January to now, I have matched, 48 consumers with volunteers, and I think that's fantastic. That's right on par with last year. That equates to 289 individual services between those 48 clients. So, and then some support to the Children's Services Program for their pre-Braille instruction. So things are moving along very well. And to speak a little bit to that last question and to just kind of give you a happy story, you know, these volunteers really are what I would call force multipliers. So I matched a woman last week who was carefully telling me that because she had recently moved, not by choice, and that she was now in a place where she cannot walk her guide dog much beyond, you know, one block because it's not safe for her and may not ever be safe for her. And she was thinking that she needed to give up her dog because she just can't work the dog. And so now she has a volunteer, and the two of them have decided that, yes, they can walk around her building, but they'll also go to the linear trail when the weather's nice, and they'll walk out there. They will also go to the mall when the weather is not nice, and they will walk there, and they will find a way to exercise her dog. So I just think that, you know, that kind of tells you a little bit about the kind of people that we're working with in terms of their indomitable spirit. So. I think, fantastic, and my records look to me like we're on par to make the same number of new volunteers as we had last year.
Very good. Thanks, Lori. Any questions for Lori?
Al, can I just say one last thing? It's Chris. I just wanted to say
one last thing
before we left Adult Services, and I do, I think I mentioned how much the adult services staff and, of course, clients are appreciating the support we're getting from staff that are supervised by Michelle Provost, that is the stockroom staff and the folks who order the devices. And I do want to say that you know, there are a lot of people who are, you know, working behind the scenes, some of them from the Besby office, some of them remotely. So it's people like Matt Rodriguez, who is in the office several days a week, sending devices out, and Lisa Tangway's staff, the staff who report to Lisa, the clerical employees and the special assistants for the blind, who are in the office fielding calls, directing clients with questions to the appropriate staff people, and at a time when, you know, we're all having to adjust to doing things differently, I really wanted to recognize the staff, you know, so it's not just the BOS staff, but also all those staff that Lisa supervises, who have really, you know, whose role in the organization has really become magnified, has become very, very critical during this last 6 month period. So,
Chris,
you know,
I feel compelled to add to that, because there's one group that we didn't mention, or you didn't mention, and that is the strategic planning committee that made sure that we all had these fantastic devices in our hands and now in our homes. Because if we were still working with the old systems, I wouldn't be able to do anything that I've been doing. But I am 100% fully functional. It might be a little, you know, more tedious without the big monitors and everything. But this is fantastic. Without the strategic planning committee and their insight or foresight, we wouldn't be doing any of this.
That's right. Absolutely.
And I think, Brian, you were the one of the co-chairs on that committee, weren't you?
Yeah, correct. And I think that we had envisioned the advantages of, for instance, remote services to hold meetings. And one of the things we wanted Microsoft Teams for was so that staff wouldn't have to drive, you know, such distances just to come to a meeting where we could do the meetings virtually. Of course, at the time, we never envisioned something like COVID, but it was very, very fortunate that the timing of rolling out these new laptops with all of their capabilities was in place prior to COVID, because it did make it considerably smoother for us to make the rapid transition in March to home duty station activities.
Thank you.
This is Andrew Norton. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead, Andrew. Yep.
I just wanted to add that in some cases, because of the technology, Lisa's staff is able to field phone calls into the agency from their homes. Am I right, Lisa? I believe that in some cases they can make the line.
Yes, all the special assistants can answer, Andrew, and the clericals as well.
So there's a lot of invention going on.
That's excellent. Very good. So we are up and running, and people have, I take it that services are still being delivered in a seamless fashion. It certainly seems that way. So I'm grateful to everybody for their ability to do that, and I thank the staff for their for stepping up and making this happen. Anything else for adult services?
No, thanks. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. All right, very good then. Looks like we're moving on to children's services now. Catherine, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you, Al. Okay, and first I want to say I'm so sorry that there was not more than one sensitive student who expressed an interest in writing an essay for the Blind Americans Equality Day. I want you to know we really did a heavy recruitment, and you know, I like the idea of maybe having this an ongoing project, and I have a feeling once things settle down in the schools that perhaps we will have more students who will be interested, because I think that this was a really worthwhile project, and I'm more than happy to stand behind yet another student recruitment for this, so I just wanted all of you to know that. But moving on to what we've been doing since we last met, so the Children's Services field staff continue to provide services to students and education team members, including parents, via email, phone, text, video as well as in person. The staff are utilizing Teams, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's similar to Zoom, but Teams is what Connecticut uses. So also using other resources to provide video support. The staff are collaborating with parents for free programs and LEAs regarding service delivery. There are, and continue to be, some challenges, especially with technology and internet access for some of our students and their families, but this is much improved since the spring, and I know the governor has recently made a big initiative to make sure that all students in Connecticut have access to technology and the internet. So the Children's Services staff are doing their best to accommodate the needs of their students and our education partners by really being flexible with their scheduling. They're spending extra time with students and parents. They're doing their best to problem solve technology, even when it's coming from the school district side or the family side. But I've got to tell you, we're having great success with virtual services. And, you know, this is really due to the dedication of the Children's Services staff, as well as additional BSBE staff who readily jump in to do what needs to be done to ensure the timely provision of goods and services. And, you know, we haven't mentioned our IT staff, but special shout out to them because they're not just assisting BSBE staff, but everyone at ADS, and they have been really phenomenal in this process. But onto like some of the more specialized things we've been doing in order to adapt to COVID. So this past spring, Lisa Pruner, one of the education consultants, and Nancy Mothersley resurrected the Literacy Skills Project, and Matt Teachings is another education consultant, also contributed adaptations of the books in these kits for children who have a diagnosis of cortical visual impairment. So the literacy skills kits include print and braille copies of books with a list of suggested activities, and typically the stories are related to ECC activities. So Nancy ensured that the materials got printed and embossed, and Matt Rodriguez mailed them out to our students. And in addition, Lisa and Matt also ensured that the materials were available online, so families could access digital copies of the books as well as all of the activities that we provided. So we know that definitely there were about 10 to 12 students who did register to receive the hard copy materials this past spring, and there were probably additional ones who were and continue to access them online. So then, through all of this, since March up until recently, we have also been interviewing to fill vacancies. So we conducted interviews for education consultants to replace the retirees Gail Johnson, Jill Baker, and Ted Palmer. So we replaced those three people with Champagne Marsh Williams this past June, Jessica Gibson it was mid to late August, and then Jackie DeTour was just hired this past Friday. Andrea Garuski retired on September 1. I did request to refill her vacancy already back in June. I'm still waiting to hear the status of that. And in addition, we still have an O&M vacancy, really two, but we're trying to just recruit and refill one. We did conduct interviews, but the position remains unfilled, and I did request to maintain the recruitment of this position because I am really confident that we find a qualified candidate. And then going back to Teams, it's not just the staff who are utilizing it. I'd like to say that, you know, I've been meeting with my staff very regularly through Teams. I had my first official Teams meeting at the end of March with the unit coordinators and my first program staff meeting at the beginning of April, and it was a success. I love Teams, my staff loves Teams, and it's fantastic. And speaking of Teams, some of the ways the staff are using it is they are providing direct and consultative services to children and their education teams via video. They're also using the phone and chat features in Teams to communicate with one another and other team members, because it's great, you can use it as a phone. And they're just utilizing as many features as possible for committee meetings. So, you know, again, using the video feature, having conversations, sharing links and documents and other resources with one another through this Teams resource. Our professional development committee successfully transitioned our annual spring in service from a live in-person format to, guess what, Teams. So Tammy Reisman and Ann Spitz of UMass Boston conducted a two-part in-service on the learning media assessment and the functional vision assessment on April 30th and May 7th. There were 34 education consultants and itinerant teachers who attended this live event, and many more were able to view the recorded event after. So participants had the opportunity to submit written questions during the in-service, and the presenters were able to answer them in real time. That was fantastic. So that was a good way for them to manage such a large group. And then also, I want you to know that information for teachers with visually impaired, parents, and other education team members is being shared by me, Nancy Motherfield, and other members of the Children's Services staff. So this sharing of information includes webinars, educational and expanded core curriculum related information, special education resources, etc. Jesse Mabry, one of our staff, has organized what we're calling an at-home learning folder on the Children's Services Drive, as well as multiple subfolders. So this is where she's archived all of these resources since the spring, in case anyone would like to reference them at a later date. And then moving on to summer, unfortunately, our sleepaway camp was canceled this year due to COVID, and basically all of our like face-to-face in-person. Online rapidly. So we conducted several Leap into Life events. Leap into Life is our transition age youth group, and we have a summer programs committee. So they all developed several events. They facilitated them. They even created self-paced, family-oriented summer experience activities. We really tried to address the needs of our students and the families. You know, some people were really gung-ho about, yeah, we want to do something in person, even if it's online. Others said, you know what, we're just trying to keep afloat here. So if you can provide us with some suggested activities, that's wonderful. And when we're ready to access them, we will. So, and I want to also mention that we did partner with Voc Rehab on some of their program ideas. So, you know, shout out to Voc Rehab on that collaboration. But I want to tell you specifically about the programs that the staff developed, because they really kind of blew me away. So there was a book club called Toys Go Out that took place in July. It was a small group of four students in grades 3 to 5. And they met via video and phone, and the book club meetings were facilitated by TVI. So they had an opportunity to discuss the book and build on their literacy skills. We also had two virtual music group sessions, one at the beginning of July, which included 8 students plus additional siblings and family members, and then on August 12th, there were 11 students plus additional siblings and family members. So that was a total of 19 BESBE students plus additional family and siblings. So this was organized by Lisa Pruner, one of our consultants who specializes in working with the 1 to 3 preschool age population. And the music group was conducted by Emily Malabakwa of Connecticut Music Therapy. And the focus was on music and movement for our youngest children. The families loved it, and I think once Lisa, you know, has gotten a hold on her caseload, she really would love to organize something again this fall because the families appreciated it. Skills for Life typically does an in-person day camp, but this year they had to go virtual. So their summer day camp met over 4 Tuesdays in July and August. A total of 8 students in grades 4 through 8 participated, and the program consisted of orientation and mobility, daily living skills, recreation, and assistive technology. Leap into Life, which typically meets like once a month or every other month during the school year, held 4 virtual events over the summer. Each week had a different health and wellness module. This was led by a personal trainer. They also had a book discussion, and they also had a mentor-led discussion, a different mentor each week. So the attendance ranged from, I want to say, 5 to 6 students. So a total of 21 students overall participated in these events. We also resurrected a story box called Please Stand in Me that was available to parents and caregivers of preschool-aged children. This was one of our self-paced activities. We had it translated into Spanish. We had confirmed 10 students that their parents received and requested and received Braille and hard copies of the books. And there were additional students who probably participated via online accessibility, but they were not tracked. I also want to say there was a virtual garden story kit that was made available to parents and caregivers of preschool-aged children. Again, this was self-paced and translated into Spanish. We also made it available to students in our special services unit. And because this was a self-paced go at it your own program, we didn't track the participants on that, so we don't know how many were utilizing it. MIBI had a similar self-paced program to the preschool program, where there was an electronic packet of home-based activities that covered all areas of the expanded core curriculum. Families could participate at their own pace, and the initial plan was to send packets home to families who registered, and we're going to get elaborate with charts and stickers, but this ended up being more of a self-paced program, and we don't know how many people participated because we didn't track it, but it was great. We had we just had such a variety available. But I will say that out of the number of students we were tracking for student participation in our programs, I can check my numbers, but I believe I added correctly, and we had 62 students participate in our virtual summer event. So now the school year is underway, and we are, all just still getting a feel for the new school year. The districts have all started at different times. I think the last one finally opened this past Friday. I know, unfortunately, Danbury had to go virtual, at least through, I think, the beginning of October, but we take it day by day. And in addition to just adjusting to the different types of service models that our students are enrolled in this fall, we have adapted our annual fall in-services. They are almost ready to go live. I'm going to tell you the hiccup there right now is yours truly. I have to review all of the actual in-services that have been planned. There's 6 of them. I've only gotten through one. I think I kind of need to clear my calendar next week and just plug through them so that we can go live. So these fall in-services will resemble a webinar where participants may have the opportunity to participate at a particular time when they, so it's very self-paced. And I got to tell you, the one I looked at already, oh my God, unbelievable. Oh my gosh. So I can't wait to look at the other 5. And on top of that, we are also involved in training on how to conduct a virtual functional vision and learning media assessment. So I'm part of a group through UMass Boston that is presenting a 6-week series on how to do this. We had our first online training yesterday. I have 5 staff who are attending the UMass trainings, and then they're part of my team here in Connecticut where we meet. So we had our first post meeting this morning to brief about the presentation I did with the others last night, and we will present to the children's service staff on Monday. So we're going to keep up this pattern for 6 weeks. Hopefully we will all have a better understanding of how to conduct these crucial assessments while we are all working remotely. this certainly shouldn't take the place of in-service assessments, but you know what, we're doing the best we can with the conditions placed on us by the virus. And, you know, we thought maybe this is just a regional concern, but we found out that we've got people from all over the United States who are participating in this training. You know, as my fellow trainers and I said, we're all together. And I guess that kind of summarizes how it is in Children's Services and through BESBE right now. We're all in this together, and we're doing our best to continue to provide the best services possible in as normal a way as possible as we can. And I'm sorry for that long summary, but that's what we've been up to. I'm done. Any questions?
Thank you, Catherine. Thanks very much. First of all, I just want to commend you on the level of engagement that you have maintained throughout throughout this time as we're dealing with the virus, and an impressive array of programs. So I'm grateful for the work you've done, and I thank you very much. And do we have any other questions for Catherine?
This is Catherine Guzman. I have a couple questions, if that's okay.
Great.
First of all, I wanted to say thank you for adopting the mantra of going your own pace. We're currently homeschooling, remote learning with both of our children, and both of them have their own IEPs and things, and with all the specialists and all the people that you have to meet with on Zoom on a weekly basis, it can get very, very overwhelming, even for those of us just, you know, stay-at-home moms that have the time to do this, let alone the parents who have to go to work. And adapting is the name of the game right now. I was curious, all of these wonderful things sound amazing, especially I always loved the book kits. Those are really great. Kudos for all of that work. I was curious if these meetings, the book kits, different things like that are sort of available online to look at, to know are coming up, other than just sort of relying on our TBIs to sort of let us know that they're available. Is there another way for parents to go on and see, okay, this month this book kit is available?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think that if we were going to post anything, I mean, Brian, I'm going to ask you as well, we probably would have to make these postings available through the ad website, is that correct?
Yes, there's a process by which things get added to the website, and the videos and things along those lines are a bit more of a challenge to get posted. There are some approval levels that need to be achieved in order for them to then get to the point where they can be considered for posting, and the size of the document, the size of the video, has some impact on how it could be posted as well. We are, as Chris had indicated earlier, we are working toward that. We recognize that there probably is some benefit in having some of these self-research resources available on our website, and it's certainly one of our goals to get more up on the website or through social media platforms to get more available. But it is, you know, a bit of a process to go through, and with the many, many other things that you're hearing that the staff are engaged in right now, some of the things I'll be updating on, it just, unfortunately, while we've wanted to get to that many, many times, is the highest priority. There's been many, many other pressing issues, safety-related issues that we've been having to, you know, address.
Yeah, of course, I completely understand. I'm just trying to figure out a way that, you know, parents could go on and know what you guys are offering, and you know, maybe there would be more participants or more people taking advantage of these things that you guys are putting all of this work into. If we could sort of go somewhere and know what's up beforehand.
It's a great suggestion, and it's certainly something that we are working on and working towards. And I'm hoping that in the coming months, for, you know, once they're up and we're satisfied that we've got a good finished product and it can be posted on a web platform that they would then be available, you know, long into the future, hopefully well after COVID is behind us, we would still have these resources available, because we have found that offering remote services, that there are efficiencies that are achievable through this, you know, saving all that travel time is certainly in and of itself quite an advantage. So we are aiming toward this as a long-term plan of ours. It's just the ability to rapidly respond as we're developing these programs to then get them posted that has presented some challenges.
Yeah. Is it possible to be updated as you guys work on this to sort of let know that it's happening?
Yeah, and it really is the consultant's responsibility to notify you of opportunities. Because I will say too, Catherine, that the information that has been coming out since mid-March for even for us is like, it is so overwhelming, and that's why we had to put together this folder that we call it our at-home learning folder on our children's drive. And that's where, like, anytime we've heard about a training or a useful article or a resource or, you know, lesson plans, we put them in this folder, and then Jesse Mabry has come up with subfolders and, you know, to try and categorize things so that if one of the children's services staff or I need to find something, hopefully we can find something that we need in that repository. But I was in there for the first time, and then there was it last week for the first time in maybe like a couple of months, and I was like, oh my God, do we really have this much in here? It's crazy what we have in there. So, you know, I think our concern too is if we send everything out all the time that comes into parents, it might be overwhelming. And that's what we would, you know, the goal is, I would hope that the consultant who's assigned to your child is going to, you know, kind of, you know, edit that information and then share those opportunities with you. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask the consultant who you're working with to really please make a point of sharing these resources with you, because they'll gladly do that. Because
I think that a lot of parents don't even realize, you know what I mean, that some of these services or, like I said, book kits or things like that are available. So sometimes it's hard to ask when you don't know what's available to ask about.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, so I think that, again, kudos to all the work, and again, very difficult for the parents to be doing this stuff, as well as you guys. Everybody's doing their best and hanging in there and staying safe. So thank you for all the work you're doing. That just a suggestion.
No, that's a really good one, and I'm going to contemplate this and see if there is a way we can, you know, I don't know, just do some kind of e-blast out to the parents. You know, I don't know if it'll be like once a week or once a month, but let me see if there's a way we can organize something like that. Because my gosh, you know, you just heard me rattle off all these things we've been doing, and if you haven't heard about them till now, that's not good, you know? So, I want to make sure you're hearing about things that, you know, would benefit you and your family. So I will ponder this. Thank you for the suggestion.
Thanks.
Excellent. Any other questions for Catherine? Okay, very good. Thank you so much for an excellent report, Catherine. Let's move on now. We have coronavirus updates. Brian, I'm going to give you the floor on this one.
Thank you, Alan. Obviously, since COVID-19 came upon us in March, we've had to make some very rapid adjustments to the way we provide service, and we've been following the governor's website instructions and also updates that we've been getting from the state in terms of building occupancy and what requirements we have. At this point in time, we are still all in a telework mode. We have a very small number of staff that report to the agency on a very part-time basis. pretty much to keep the mail moving, to scan documents and get them out to the field staff. As Lisa, or I think it was Lisa who mentioned earlier, we have solved through technology the way to have some phone coverage that's been enhanced so that the calls ring to people's home duty stations. We have also been providing services in the community on a very, very specifically parameter basis, meaning that the process by which services in the community were being provided up until last week, Chris mentioned, required my personal approval. Last week, I did issue some updated protocols to staff on how they can now begin the process of what I'll call closer contact in-person services where you need to be closer than 6 feet in order to deliver the service. We had previously had guidance that allowed for staff to provide services as long as they could maintain the required social distancing of 6 feet or more. Once the governor issued protocols on senior center reopening and it had some parameters around some other options for services in those settings, I was able to then work from that document in order to incorporate some updated guidance to provide to staff, and then subsequently provided that guidance to the providers that need to consider providing close contact services, such as our support service providers who work with individuals who are deaf and blind. So that guidance has also been sent out earlier this week to the providers that work with the individuals that are deaf and blind so that they can resume those types of services as well. The protocols are, quite significant in terms of what is required. There's guidance around if you need to transport somebody in a vehicle. There's guidance around if you need to touch objects in terms of sanitizing requirements. There's a questionnaire that has to be asked before you meet with the individual and anybody else who may be present, because we need to be sure that not only are our staff individuals safe, but anyone we're meeting with is also safe. We take this very, very seriously, as you all can imagine. So with the questionnaire, we're asking about symptoms, if you've had contact with somebody within the last 14 days who's exhibited these COVID-related symptoms, if you or anyone in your immediate household, if we're going into a home, have they been in one of the states that's on the travel advisory list where there's some quarantining requirements. So we're going through this layer of questioning to be sure that before we go and we do that visit in the field, that it's not only safe for our staff person to do it, but it's also equally safe for the individuals that we're going to see. And then there's also the requirement that if there are other protocols in place, such as if a teacher is going into a school, they have to also adhere to whatever protocols that location has in place, because some locations have other protocols that may vary slightly or be in addition to things that we're requiring, and so we need to adhere to those as well. So with this additional guidance, we're able to resume close contact services, but that's primarily still if there's no other reasonable alternative. Because we are still working remotely, our goal is to the greatest extent possible to continue to deliver services remotely where they can be done. But we have been approving all along some community-based services. Chris gave the example of the mobility instructors that have been requesting, being granted permission to provide some community-based services. And some of the teachers and children's services have been requesting and granted permission to provide some community-based services. But this newer guidance that just came out does expand the options for the field staff, and it also delegates the authority to review and make a decision on approving to the supervisory level. as we look into the, you know, fall, as things are progressing, at this point, it would appear that, as I said earlier, that we will certainly be maintaining a teleworking environment through the end of the calendar year, and then our commissioner will obviously be reassessing based on the developments of COVID around us, which is a very difficult thing to predict for. So where we are at right now in terms of services within the home, we really, just to clarify, never stopped the option of whether a service could be provided in a home. The issue was the social distancing, and the issue was being able to control for who else might be in that home, who else might be encountered, where it becomes very difficult for us to assess whether or not other family members or other folks who live in that home may or may not have come back recently in the last 14 days from one of the states that's on the mandatory list for self-quarantining, or otherwise the symptoms. You know, we would need to establish not just whether the person we're meeting with may have any of those potential symptoms, but is anybody else within that household who may be encountered or who was there the day before but isn't there today, did they exhibit any of those symptoms? So it has been quite a challenge to make sure that when we make the decision to authorize someone to go out in the community or go into an indoor setting, that they have, to the greatest extent available to them, the capabilities to assess if it's going to be a safe environment. So I think with these new protocols, we'll start seeing more options for services that require closer contact at less than 6 feet, but we still have to maintain safety. So with that, I'll take any questions anybody has on COVID.
Mary Ann Nelly?
No, just go ahead, thank you.
Oh, okay. So, you'll be sending out the questionnaire on internet questionnaire, so the person could fill it out. Obviously, you're not going to mail it.
No, it's not a questionnaire that is meant to be completed in a written format. It is a questionnaire that is intended to be asked of the individual the morning of the meeting, and then the person is to respond. And if the person is unable to respond by, like, a telephone call, then we have to work out an accessible methodology that would allow them to participate in answering the question.
Okay, I understand. So simple things such as going into a blind person's home and marking things with bump dots. Now, I did hear Chris say that you were doing that virtually with a sighted person in the home. If that's not available to a blind client, would you now go into the home and do that for them?
As long as the questions that were asked resulted in confirmation that it is safe for our employee to go into the home.
Okay. And obviously, all these clients have to be registered with you as clients. You have to someone call you up and say, hey, I need help.
Well, it's not a difficult process to get someone registered. We've actually had that happen. You send them a copy of the iReport. They get the doctor to fill it out. The doctor faxes it to us. And I mean, I've dealt with that in the last week, where we turned it around within a few days and were able to get some services that a person requested in place. I think the issue becomes, again, when you're being asked to go into a home, there are additional variables. It's not just that one individual, but now you have to drill down to ask if you had any visitors in your house in the last 4 days. Did any of them exhibit these symptoms? Because COVID doesn't manifest itself in 24 hours. It can incubate over a period of quite a number of days. And so the person may be symptom-free today, but we need to be concerned, who did they come in contact with yesterday, the day before, who's living in that home with them? There are a lot of layers that we need to look at, so that is why, to the extent that services can be provided remotely or virtually, we're going to still do that. The last thing we want to have happen is find out that one of our staff folks came down with COVID, and they were just in this person's house yesterday, but they didn't know, they had no symptoms yesterday, but today they came down with it. You know, we're trying to always keep safety at the forefront, and we recognize this is not ideal. You know, for how many months was it doctors weren't seeing patients in their offices, and everything was telemed, and our numbers are showing, you know, there's fewer people seeing the doctors, fewer referrals are coming in because people need to first go to a doctor, doctor needs to do the eye exam, and then say, okay, this person's legally fine. So we've seen an impact on, you know, new referrals into the agency. We've seen an impact on, you know, people that are getting employment. A lot of, as Mary Burgard reported at the June meeting, a lot of clients were furloughed or laid off because those businesses closed during COVID. And now some of them are certainly reopening, and some of our clients are being called back, but, you know, they're reopening with restrictions around them. So we're kind of having to follow those leads as well.
Oh, I completely understand, Brian. This is, I'm just, how can I say this? Getting information for someone in my group who doesn't understand this, and I'm trying to get as much information as I can to explain it to this person so that this person can understand why Desi hasn't been going out. I completely understand. I'm just trying to get as much information so I can explain it to a person in my affiliate who doesn't comprehend. So this is great. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your willingness to be of assistance. I again, just want to clarify that we have staff that are going out in the field, but they are going out after it's been assessed that it's safe for them to go out. So, you know, our mobility instructors have been providing mobility lessons. They've just been maintaining 6-foot distancing. With this new document, we put out these new protocols. There's now protocols that allow for certain things that can occur if the person needs to be closer than 6 feet, maybe needs to do a Sunday guide lesson. So we've got protocols around how to do some of these things. We've got protocols about what to do if a person says they can't wear a mask. How will we interact with that individual? But I just don't want anyone to think that we haven't been doing anything in the field, because we have been approving them, but we've been approving them with very particular safety-minded parameters.
I just wanted to give a little bit more detail just quickly that obviously, in addition to the sorts of critical safety issues that I outlined earlier that mobility staff are responding to, we also have, for example, a considerable number of young or not so young sometimes, students returning to college. Because adult services mobility staff, sort of all the adults, whether they have active VR cases or active adult services cases, we've also dispatched the mobility instructors to assist a lot of our students who were returning to, you know, undergraduate or graduate education on the college level. And then again, we've been out there pretty robustly with clients who have gotten jobs. And that is a surprise. I mean, perhaps surprisingly, there have been quite a few clients who have gotten jobs. And, you know, we've had to, say, be there at like an Amazon warehouse and, work on protocols for helping clients, you know, get to and from their workplaces. And these are things that have, a lot of these things have risen to the level of, you know, but they're not always, you know, they're not always like safety crises. They're also, they're just significant and very important issues that, that you know,